You know, I think a lot of us can identify with kind of looking around at what all goes on in the culture right now and finding it harder and harder to tell the difference between what's real and what isn't, and to decide exactly where we come down on things. Don't you kind of notice that feeling from time to time? There is a way for us to kind of examine life and to decide who's right about it. And you know, one of the ways to do that, when you kind of peel back the layers and think about things and get right down to the bottom line, the deciding factor is where you really think in your heart of heart the best, most fulfilling, rewarding, and happiest life is to be found. Who points the way to where the life is that really deserves to be congratulated and sought after and dreamed about and aimed for? Who you think can answer that question? It really turns out to be the Lord and Master of your life, if you think about it. One of the blessings of the Gospel of Matthew is Matthew's providing us with a way to think about this. And he does it, interestingly, by telling us what happened on one hill or mountain, and then wanting us to think that that means that what happened on another hill or mountain earlier on was right. Justin helped us visit this mountain over here last week briefly from reading in Matthew 28. And you're going to need to have your Bible open for this one today, so please follow along. In Matthew 28, verse 16, and I'd like to read through 18. And this is after the news that there's no reason to be afraid, that the Jesus who was crucified is now risen, and this place where they laid him is empty. And it says, "Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain," doesn't mean a big old peak necessarily, but a high hill, "to which Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted." Justin helped us to think about that some last week. "Jesus came and said to them, 'All,'" there's a contrast between some and all, I think, "'all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me.'" Now, supposing that we accept that statement, when we made the good confession, then that's what we were saying. We believe that all authority in heaven and on earth is given to him. This is said after he's experienced the worst that this earth had to offer. And yet he can make this claim. But reflecting back in the Gospel of Matthew, his ministry started with another hill. Look back to Matthew chapter 5 with me for a moment. In Matthew 5, please keep verses 1 through 10 before you. Notice that this one said, and this is, of course, the beginning of the Sermon on the, what was it called? The Sermon on the Mount. Because of the place. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and again, a high hill. "And when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and he taught them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God or children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then moving to the second person directly, he says, blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. On that other mountain, that later one, the risen Christ said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. On this mountain, we have his word about how the best life on this earth is to be found. Notice in what we call the Beatitudes, what takes place, Matthew 5, 1 through 10 especially. The word for blessed is more of an exclamation. Brother Jack Lewis said it can be close to, oh, the happiness of, or congratulations to. And then it mentions the poor in spirit, those who mourn, the meek, the hungering and thirsting for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, and those who are persecuted. And he blesses them with language that is drawn from the Old Testament about God's favor that comes in the time of the Messiah. And it's like an announcement that he's making about what God is beginning with his presence and his work in the world. You notice also that everything he said is very different from what the world ordinarily assumes. The assumption usually is that those who are in the opposite circumstances of the ones who are mentioned here are the ones who really get on in the world, who really enjoy and experience happiness and really get to where they can be admired. And that forces us then to ask, do you believe him or them? Was he right? Is this really how life works? Is this really how the best that there is can be found? And I think that's what Matthew means for us to be able to check out by comparing what happens on these two mountains. If what Matthew is saying to us is that what happens with Jesus here means that what Jesus taught over here was right. If all authority on heaven and on earth is given him, it means he's right about life. What he taught before was true after all. And I'd like to try to illustrate it for us for a few moments, just with two parts. The first being that what Jesus teaches in the Beatitudes proved to be true in his own life. And then secondly, what Jesus teaches over here will prove to be true in our lives as well. Please think along with me about this. What Jesus teaches in the Beatitudes, what he taught in the Sermon on the Mount, proved to be true in his own experience. And it's almost as if the Beatitudes are the Lord's autobiography, if you think about it. It's how his life turned out. And look, and being raised up and on this later mountain, you can see that. For example, you think of the poor in spirit. Jesus is the one who said, I can do nothing on my own. John 5 and verse 30. I do what I see my Father doing. He's the one who we read about recently who said, I commit, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. In terms of mourning, he's the Lord is the one who saw what was happening in the world, the evil, the hurt, the suffering that people go through, and whose heart is broken by it. In Matthew 9, for example, starting at verse 35, Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every disease, every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he was moved with compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless or distressed and downcast, like sheep without a shepherd. It broke his heart to see what went on in the world. And then in terms of meekness, Jesus is the one who could say, you come to me. If you're weary and heavy laden, then you come to me because I'm meek, or I'm gentle and lowly in heart. You'll find rest to your souls. You'll find out that what is laid on you by following me is easy and best for you after all. Jesus' gentleness, his strength, his meekness, in other words, is shown in many ways through his life. The hungering and thirsting after righteousness happened first with him. In his temptation in Matthew 4 and verse 4, his trial, Jesus is the one who said, man shall not live by bread alone, if you remember, but by every word that comes from God's mouth. He was hungry, but hungry for righteousness most. In John 4, in verses 33 and 34, when he had been talking with the woman at the well about the real God, and the disciples came back wondering if anybody had given him something to eat, he said, I have food you don't know anything about. My food is to do the will of my Father who sent me and to accomplish his work. That's what his deepest desires, his hunger and his thirst, his most basic human needs were. In terms of the merciful, Jesus' entire ministry is a record of that. In fact, when he comes down from the hill that John or that Matthew has him on over here, Matthew 8, verse 1, when he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him, and behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. A leper, if you don't know, was a terrible, revolting, repulsive, hopeless skin disease. Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will be clean. Not only the physical circumstances, but the social circumstances and spiritual circumstances of people drew the mercy of Jesus. In Matthew 9, in verse 9, it says that when Jesus had called the tax collector Matthew, he reclined at the table in Matthew's house with tax collectors and sinners who came, and they were at the table with him and his disciples as well. One of the Pharisees saw it and said to the disciples, why does your teacher eat with people like this? That's how we would say it. But when he heard it, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. He was showing mercy. He was fulfilling what the law required of him. Jesus is the poor in spirit who mourns and is meek and hungers and thirsts for righteousness, but extends mercy to people because he's pure in heart. One of the best illustrations of this that I could find happens in John 14 and verse 30, when in the stress of that last night before he's betrayed and crucified, Jesus could say, the prince of this world, in other words, the devil is coming. The ruler of this world is coming, but he has nothing in me. Most of us, even if we can behave outwardly in certain ways, still are guarded about what really is happening in our hearts, where our thoughts are the most personal and secret. But there's nothing about Jesus' motives, nothing about his intentions, nothing about his purposes that are duplicitous or double-minded. He's also the peacemaker who is willing to do whatever it takes in order to bring people to God and to bring people together and to bring people to wholeness in life. In John 14, again, at verse 27, a good example of this, Jesus said to his disciples, peace I leave with you, My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give you to you. Let not your heart be troubled, your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. He gives peace by even giving himself. Ephesians 2, verses 14 and 15 will tell us. And then, was he persecuted for righteousness' sake? More than anybody. In John 15 at verse 26, it said that Jesus explains what is happening, but that what is written in their law must be fulfilled. They hated me without a cause. That's persecution for righteousness' sake. And the most striking illustration of this, to me at least, happens when Jesus is arrested. Luke 22, verses 52 and 53. In this passage, they come out after him, and Jesus steps forward, having his disciples put up their sword. He said to the chief priest and the officers of the temple and the elders who had come out against him, "Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you day after day in the temple, you did not lay hands on me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness." Well, they did lay hands on him, and darkness did its awful work, and we've been thinking about that the last 3 or 4 weeks. But you remember, that wasn't the end of the story, was it? Over on that mountain that we read about in Matthew 28, the Jesus who has been through all of these experiences of the Beatitudes now finds that his reward is great. He's been raised up alive. All authority, notice the terminology, in heaven and earth is his. Meaning that now, as the Beatitudes said, he is comforted, he is satisfied, he sees God, because he's been exalted to God's right hand. What Jesus said about life in the Beatitudes proves to be true in his own life. He's the emphasis that what he said on this mountain over here is right after all. He's right about life. Now, what Jesus teaches in the Beatitudes will also prove to be true in our own lives. When we say that he's right about life, we are expressing a desire and an intention for these statements he made in Matthew 5 to be real in our hearts and words and lives. Who really is to be congratulated and taken into account? If you're going to answer that question to yourself, then remember that there are at least 3 things for you to bear in mind with Jesus or with us. 1, what goes on within yourself and in your life overall? You got to take that into account if you're deciding what's real. 2, what does your approach to these things contribute or not contribute to other lives? In other words, you have to think about how your life impacts the community around you, the culture, the society. And 3, what happens in the longer term, even after your life, to you and to those who come along after you? Whether you agree that Jesus has it right or not, whether you take the approach he taught and lived or its opposite, the validity of it can be weighed or tested by those three guidelines. So let's do it for a minute with regard to ourselves, as we've done with Jesus. Let me just say it without an explanatory description of each of these qualities, sort of how we might express the thought in each case. Let's start with the Beatitudes themselves. Here's what the teaching of Jesus applied to us would end up expressing in life. The poor in spirit are saying, not everything is about me. My issues, my ideas, my desires, not everything is about me. Those who mourn say, it would grieve me to hurt you. I would grieve over seeing anybody treated unjustly. The meek person says, I'm under control. I can rule my own spirit. I'm strong enough to be gentle with you. Those who hunger and thirst are saying, for righteousness, they're saying, I want more than anything to do what's right, and I want what's right to be vindicated or to triumph. The merciful say, I feel for you. I care. I notice. The pure in heart say, you can trust me. I'm not trying to manipulate you or to do something to you or to get something out of you. The peacemaker says, relationships are valuable and I'll work at building ours. And the persecuted for righteousness' sake are saying, I believe the right thing is worth whatever it takes, however hard that might be. Now those are the messages, so think about them on this side here. Let me just repeat them quickly. Here are the messages, if you look down through the Beatitudes. Not everything is about me. It would grieve me to hurt you. I'm under control. I want more than anything to do what's right. I feel for you. You can trust me. I'll work at building a relationship. And I believe the right thing is worth whatever it takes. Now think about that in light of the three measures we've mentioned. What will that do inside of you and in your life? What kind of society, community will the practice of those things create? And what about after your life, either you before the Lord or those who have known you and loved you, what will go on with them? Now, fairness means that whether we are religious or not, whether we classify ourselves as believers or not, we shouldn't forget that the other approach also sends its messages and has its effect. Here's the way. I couldn't necessarily just make it in one statement, but let me describe the other approach that's opposite to what Jesus said. If there's no poor in spirit, then that means what there is proud and haughty self-sufficiency. If there's no mourning, that means I'm intent on my personal pleasure and my own will. If there's no meekness, then there's self-serving aggression that goes berserk when it's challenged and which seizes by crushing. If there's no desire for righteousness, then individuals end up being driven by self-indulgence, by self-will, by greed, and ultimately immorality. Where there's no mercy, there are self-absorbed, hard-hearted, and cruel people. If there's not any purity of heart, then there's insincerity, manipulation, and corruptness. If there's no peacemaking, there's quarrelsome and resentful, in-your-face confrontation. And where there's no persecution for righteousness' sake, there is no honor which thinks that some things are worth it, even if they're hard. Now, what kind of life would that produce inside of me in my everyday experience? or in the community around me and in the society around me, or after me, that has to be thought about, and it can be thought about. What do you think? It isn't simply religious to ask which of these approaches produces the healthier self, which will lead to the more wholesome society, which offers the more hopeful future. And if you really think about it, one approach over here in Matthew 5 is bracketed in verse 3 and verse 10 by theirs is the kingdom of heaven. They're under God's rule. And in between is the one who is comforted, who inherits the earth, who is satisfied, who receives mercy, who sees God, and who's in God's family. In the other approach, one receives neither heaven nor earth, but the world as it already is and as it's always been, and there's no expectation of anything any different from the world. Either way, according to Matthew's gospel, Jesus is there. He's on this mountain where some worship him and some doubt, but he's there saying, all authority in heaven and on earth is given to me. And he's right about life, and he's proven it by living it, and he has the authority to offer it to us, and he does offer it to us. And there's good reason for us to follow him. Notice I said reason. There's good reason for us to follow him. And the reason is he's right about life. And you remember that following Jesus means being his disciple. He goes ahead to say, go therefore and make disciples of people from everywhere, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, uniting them with my work, in other words, and then teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, like the things back over there on that first mountain. This morning, when we've been together on the Lord's Day, we've been determining to live this week for the Lord. And I've been trying to describe to you a reason for doing that. And if you see that and you accept it and you haven't yet made the good confession and been baptized into his name, or if you'd made that beginning and you drifted away and tried to find life some other way and need to come back to him by prayer with your brothers and sisters, please indicate that. Let us know by coming to the front here while we stand and sing this song.